Hey guys, it's Ryan here from London, UK, via New Zealand. And this episode of IVMV is brought to you by Patreon supporters like me. So roll the intro music, Corey, and more importantly, go Cubbies.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. If you're just finding us, thanks for doing so. We talk about the Cubs all year long, including the offseason. You can find the podcast in iTunes, the iOS podcast app, or any other podcast app, or you can listen on our website, IVMV.com. And also, if you go to IVMV.com/live, you can watch us do these recordings live. We typically record them at 8 p.m. on Sunday evenings, and there's a chat there, and you can get engage in the conversation with all the other Cubs fans that are watching. So I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
I don't know, guys. Do we really have anything to talk about tonight?
Seems to be pretty short.
It's been rough trying to scrounge up some talking points for tonight, but we've got a few things that'll take about 15 minutes or so.
Right, yeah. Normally we say, oh, this should be a quick one, and it still goes like an hour. And this one, I'm saying buckle up because there's a lot to cover. But I guess we can keep everything kind of vague, you know. A lot of the things.
Is that where we're really good at? We're really good at that.
So. Keeping it vague. I would say this is probably our biggest off-season episode in the 7-season history of our podcast. We've got two big signings, Hayward and Zobrist, to talk about, and then we want to spend some time, I guess, reflecting on Starlin Castro's years with the Cubs. And I honestly think like each of those topics could fill an entire off-season episode. And so now we have the task of fitting all three topics into one episode. So we'll see how this goes.
Let's do this.
All right. So the Cubs continue to make the team stronger this off-season, and basically they're doing it by picking the Cardinals' pockets, which is really fun and a great way to do it, I think. Last week we kind of embraced John Lackey while holding our noses, and I would say we don't have to hold our noses with the latest player that the Cubs swiped from the Cardinals' clutches, and obviously that's Jason Hayward. So Kurt, give us some details on this Hayward signing.
Well, let's start with the contract details, which are 8 years, $184 million, which, you know, seems not so bad considering a lot we're projecting 10 years at $200 million plus. In fact, it's reported that the Nationals and Cardinals both offered more than $200 million, which is saying something, because, you know, we've talked before about the value of this team outside of baseball and sort of the fun they have, the renovations, this front office, all that stuff combined to attract free agents. And I think this is one of those, because it seems like he took a little bit of a cut to come to the Cubs to try to win it in Chicago. And it's also being reported that the contract includes two opt-outs after the third and fourth year, which is kind of odd, a little bit rare to have them that early in the contract. But perhaps that was another incentive for him to take this deal. You know, if it doesn't work out, he could always leave. So that's kind of the money side of things. You know, and I'm sure that there are some people questioning this amount of money, you know, on one guy, and I think it makes a lot of sense given that he's 26, he's super young, he hit free agency a lot earlier than most do, and you can't just look at his offensive numbers alone, which are quite good. His slash line was .293, .359, .439, but he hit 13 home runs and had 60 RBI, so those are good numbers. But, you know, a lot of people who are sort of used to looking at offensive numbers are probably going to look at that and say, oh, is it worth that much money? But he's really, it's kind of the definition of the five-tool player. Defensively, he's one of the best in the game. And since 2010, he has 122 defensive runs saved, which is the best in baseball over that time. So, you know, he's keeping runs off the board for the opposing team. And he's got a great arm. He's got good range. He's got some speed. He stole 23 bases. He doesn't strike out a lot. He's about 15% strikeout rate. He walks a fair amount, plus he hits for high average. So his on-base percentage is just kind of way up there. So, you know, he's a great all-around player. I mean, you really can't argue with how good he is. So hopefully he kind of keeps up those numbers with the Cubs. And there's no reason to think he won't, considering he's 26. And I think he's really coming into the prime of his career. So I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's just really exciting that he's not. He's a player I think that's exciting because if he comes in and how am I trying to word this? That he's not like a one, not a one tool. That doesn't sound right, but you know, like a one dimensional player. He's not a one dimensional player. So if he comes in and all, if he's a power guy and then he comes in and can't hit for power, then you're stuck with almost nothing, like maybe Soriano was for a stretch there. But he's the kind of guy that could maybe fall back in one area, and he's got so many just like all around baseball skills that he still holds a tremendous, you know, holds tremendous value.
And I think the other thing I didn't mention is that, you know, so we talked about him alone and his numbers, but like how he fits into this lineup with, you know, Bryant and Rizzo and you know, go down the list. I mean, it's just the protection that they're going to provide each other based on where he's, you know, he's going to be at the top of the lineup. But it's going to be crazy.
Could you imagine being an opposing starting pitcher and looking at that lineup card?
Oh, it's just scary.
It's ridiculous. Yeah,
I mean, there's just no relief.
No. Addison Russell, that's your relief.
No.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Did you guys know that Hayward's middle name is Alias?
No. I didn't know that.
Well, now you know.
I didn't know he's 26.126 years old.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Holding it down in the age, the accuracy in the age department.
Yeah. It's real. This has been a lot of fun to watch happen. And like I said, I don't know if it was their intentions, the Cubs front office intentions to go after the Cardinals like this. But it's really been enjoyable to see the front office just really stick it to St. Louis. Lackey and Hayward were two free agents that the Cardinals wanted back, and those two guys both took less money to leave St. Louis and to play for the Cubs. And like, you know, they left money on the table just to be a part of what the Cubs are doing. And mm-hmm. and after the last 5 or 6 years, the worst stretch in Cubs history and arguably the best stretch in Cardinals history. How great is this? Like how much fun is it to be sitting here as Cubs fans, and how great like must the player, just the organization as a whole feel right now that like, yes, the Cubs just had their worst stretch. The Cardinals had their best stretch, and people are coming to play for the Cubs for less money.
Yeah. It's incredible. I think too is, I mean, it's a bit of a like, you know, it's a shift in baseball thinking. You know, the Cardinals are representative of the old baseball way, the Cardinal way of how, you know, it's discipline and all that other stuff. And the Cubs are like the fun new team who play well and play loose. And I think players want to play there more than they want to play like for the crotchety old grandpas.
that'll get mad if you like don't have your hat quite straight enough.
Exactly. Or... I think it's
tuck in your pockets.
You know, up your pants, young man.
If you want to win, you got to tuck in your pockets.
Except, look at the fact that they like. You would think that they would dislike Yachty and his neck tats and all that kind of stuff, but they love him.
If he signed somewhere else, they'd turn on him.
Right. Then he'd
same thing with Hayward. They were way into him, and then he signed somewhere else, and then now the racism comes out.
Right. No, there's no racism in Missouri. Come on, Andy. Oh. Yeah, so we've seen all the reactions from the best fans in baseball on Twitter and, you know, death and injury threats, racism. Have you guys had any interaction with normal Cardinals fans about this?
I haven't spoken to any Cardinals fans at all. So,
see,
you put like there was a little inflection in your voice when you said normal Cardinals fans.
Because there are some out there. Come on.
Have you met any?
Okay, so my coworker, I talk about him on here. He's kind of my go-to for Cardinal fandom because he is like he's got a small elements of the BFIB in him, but not a ton. I mean, that's just not who he is as a fan or whatever. But I did really enjoy it because, like, okay, the day before the signing, Hayward was a five-tool player. You know, he was a five-tool player, wanted him back, felt, you know, the Cardinals had showed him their best and that why would he not want to play in baseball heaven and all this kind of stuff. Desperately wanted him, you know, but was nervous that the Cubs were in discussion. Like, he was nervous about that. And then, of course, I got to break the news to him because it happened during the workday, so I enjoyed that. And then,
does he have the IVMV app?
Hey, he might actually, I don't know. He's a good guy. But anyway, so then after the sign, so like he had to go to a school, get out of the office and probably had to like collect himself. And then after the sign, so then he comes back and he's like, then it was all about like, Hayward's not really that great. You know, he only made the All-Star game once and that was his rookie season. You know, yeah, it's just, that's okay. He's not that great. I was like, oh, you weren't saying that yesterday.
Oh, man.
But
so good.
Yeah. I mean, make no mistake. This stings Cardinals fans. They wanted him. They traded away Shelby Miller to get him for a season and hoped that year in St. Louis would help their chances of having him long term. And that did not happen. And they lost their go-to pitcher from the playoffs. You know, the same playoffs where they lost to the Cubs, in case you forgot. And I don't know I love it. It's so I hung up my W flag outside just for the Cardinals fans that drive by.
You're such a troll.
For the four people that drove by and two of them are Cardinals fans.
But it stung them.
Yeah, it hurt bad.
I do want to, I want to read while we're kind of on this topic of just kind of like trolling Cardinals fans and I don't know, I guess kind of in a way enjoying their misery right now. This is from, I think this kind of gets your blood pumping if you're a Cubs fan. So this is an article from sportsonearth.com. It was written by Will Leach, I guess his name, or Leitch, Will Leach, something Leitch. He's a Cardinals fan. And
he's the Deadspin guy,
right? Yeah, right. The Deadspin guy. And the article is entitled, It's the Cubs World Now. So I'm going to read this real quick, just a section of it. It says, But for years, some fans have claimed wrongly that the Cubs-Cards rivalry isn't a real rivalry because the Cards have always been so much better than the Cubs. This, not coincidentally, is the same thing Yankees fans used to say about the Red Sox before Epstein took over there as well. Now some have said in the wake of the Cubs signing of Hayward that this ratchets up the rivalry. But if anything, I believe it dampens it. Even before Friday, the Cubs were a better team than the Cardinals in just about every way. Now the Cubs took the Cardinals' best player, the gap between these teams has widened. If anyone needs to prove this is a rivalry, it's the fading Cardinals. Because here's what's happened in the last 2 months. The Cubs have bashed the Cardinals out of the playoffs. They've taken the Cardinals' best postseason pitcher. They've taken the Cardinals' best position player. Those two players, both of whom the Cardinals wanted back, took below-market deals so that they could play for the Cubs. That doesn't look like a rivalry to me. That looks like an uprising. That looks like the unleashing of furious vengeance and righteous anger.
Whoa.
To quote Jules from Pulp Fiction.
So that is a Cardinals fan that wrote that. So...
yeah, I can't disagree.
This is the most fun that I could have in an off season. Really, yeah. It's just like I don't.
I'm kind of curious where like all the Theo haters and the front office haters that were around a couple years ago that were really really vocal. Like, what are they thinking? How are they feeling now? And have they come around? Because I hope they do. Like, I hope they just let it go and they just come join us and have some fun with this because this is really awesome.
Well, I know one person that I don't know if I would call him a Theo hater, but someone that was pretty skeptical and didn't necessarily like the way that Theo was doing this. And I know that he enjoyed the 2015 season. There was still there was some reservation, I guess. but if you can't enjoy this, then I don't know.
Yeah, you got to find a different interest in life. Stamp collecting or something.
Right. I think there are probably, and I don't know, I guess you'd have to go to Cubs.com and start reading the messages there, you know, the boards, the messages and everything to know whether or not those people are sticking to their guns. But I'm sure that they will, you know, if the Cubs were happen to get knocked out in the postseason, then it'll be because they didn't get Price or something like that. So there will always be people that can criticize front offices for anything. So,
well, them and the people calling Ricketts cheap too. I mean,
right.
Their arguments don't hold any water really anymore either.
Yeah. Except for those people are the ones that literally want them to go out and buy everyone.
Yeah.
So
that's a,
I don't know. No, I was just going to say, like, what else do we want to talk about with Hayward here? I mean, the one thing too that kind of stands out to me is that this front office has, they looked at what happened in the NLCS and there were glaring weaknesses on the team. There were also glaring strengths that we saw throughout this season and even in the postseason, but there were big weaknesses. One of them, outfield defense. Another one, pitching, starting pitching. And it really is fun to be in the position where the Cubs front office has identified those weaknesses, and that's what they're trying to fix right now. Like, that is a win now mentality, and that's something that we haven't seen in so long. That before now, there's been big weaknesses, but they didn't really necessarily try to fix those weaknesses because they were trying to build that organizational depth that has led to this. And so now it's like, it was so fun to see, like, oh, the defense in the outfield needs to get better. Oh, let's bring in a 3-time Gold Glove winner. Mm-hmm. Oh, the pitching needs to get better. Well, let's take the Cardinals' best pitcher in the playoffs and somebody that has a lot of postseason experience. And so that's one of the main things that stands out to me with this signing.
Yeah, and then you did it without putting yourself in a position where it's like a couple seasons and done. You know, you didn't sell out, basically. You've maintained your depth as an organization.
Did you guys see Timothy on the Patreon group posted the Cubs opening day lineup in 2012?
Oh, man. Was,
you know, talk about the opposite of a win now type of lineup to put on the field. But, you know, it was painful at the time, but as we see what they're going to be marching out onto the field this season, it makes living through those years feel worth it.
Yeah. In the chat here, Andrew says, is this what it's like to be a Yankees fan? And I would say this is quite a bit different, though, because the Yankees had that money to go out and just spend it kind of like Jim Hendry did. Spend it for the short term and then figure that you'll suffer later and just figure it out then. And a lot of backloaded contracts and everything. And that's not really what the Cubs are doing, even with the big money signings that they're making. Hayward is, even if he doesn't use his, you know, if he doesn't opt out of the contract, he's not on, the Cubs are buying, in theory, his best years yet. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot different than what, you know, teams like the Yankees and the Cubs did, is that they paid for the downside of players' careers. They played for past performances rather than future performances. And so that's where I think this is a big difference, that it's kind of like, I guess in a way, it's kind of like what it's like to be a Yankees fan, except for you're actually buying the right players.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so rare that, you know, a guy of this caliber at this age comes on the market. And I think it's, I don't know. I suppose we could talk about this all day, but
as you said, a unique skill set too, that not a lot of players have.
Yeah. That's what made this, like, preparing for this episode so, like, stressful for me, because it's like there's so many different ways you can go with this, and there's just so many different things to discuss. I mean, and the interesting thing is, we could get into the, like, position discussion if you guys want. But before that, well, yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Like, do you guys think that Hayward is the center fielder? What do you, I mean, this offseason is not done yet, obviously. So it's hard to say, like, oh yeah, he's going to be in center field when, if a trade for Soler happens, then he probably slides over to right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. You have the rumblings of Baez working out in center field during the winter leagues, so they have their contingency plans, perhaps. But yeah, it looks like he's center fielder.
Mm-hmm. As it sits right now, yeah, he's your most likely center fielder, pending another deal.
And the nice thing about that is that when you get a guy that's 26 years old that has like amazing right field defense, he's still going to have above average center field defense. Where if you get a free agent that's maybe 30, 31 and plays great right field defense, it's going to be tougher to slide him into center field. So, I mean, that's that youth and that versatility that almost every player on this team has.
Yeah, and that's what one of my friends, Art, pointed out to me. Playing center at Wrigley is different than a lot of other ballparks, too. And at D Newcomer 00 in the chat said the same thing.
Yeah, and the nice thing, though, is that he's played right field at Wrigley Field. You know, I mean, he's been in the National League his whole career so far, so it's not a completely foreign place to him. I mean, especially being in the division this year, he's played there a lot.
And even with the Braves, he saw it a couple times.
Right. Yeah. I think it's really exciting. I remember Hayward's opening day, his rookie year, when he hit a home run. I believe it was his first at bat. I remember it was the opening day where I was watching it outside. It was warm enough in April. It was at our old house, and we had that patio. We were able to watch out there. I was out there with Bob from Moline, and I remember, like, seeing him and just wishing, like, oh, I wish we had a 19 or 20 year old that could be this exciting. And really kind of like at the time, I mean, it just seemed like he was a really special player that could really pretty much do anything he wanted. And I wish that he would have been on the Cubs and just had to be patient, I suppose.
To wait a few years.
And it's not like he hasn't had his struggles along the way, you know. Sure, his second season with the Braves, he had a rough season batting average wise and just, in several other categories as well. But it appears that, you know, he's been on the up and up since then.
Yeah, and I really, you know, I expect that this coaching staff would have, you know, be able to help him too. I mean, obviously he's not like a rookie. He doesn't need a ton of coaching or whatever, but this coaching staff has definitely shown that they can get the most out of players, and there's a lot there to get out of them, so... yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that I'm okay with him playing center field or right field. I mean, he's played some center field, but he's good pretty much wherever he plays. And I think that I could handle seeing him play in center field for a couple of years. And maybe because of his youth, playing there for a year and a half, maybe that's what the Cubs are considering, especially if Almora fits into the picture. Like I said, the outfield defense was weak this year. Fowler isn't good. Soler and Schwarber were exposed in the NLCS. And you add in Hayward, and now maybe down the road, Almora. Outfield defense is drastically better on this team if those two end up in the outfield.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to say about Hayward other than... we're just happy he's on our team.
Yeah, I think that about covers it. It's been I've had to. It's the sort of a pinch me moment where I've been like, really, did that just happen? So,
well, and it's really fun too. I mean, kind of going back to the Cardinals thing that during the NLDS, the one hitter on the Cardinals that scared me was Hayward. I dreaded seeing him come up to bat because you knew he was going to take good at bats. You knew he had power, and he was just scary. And it's just pretty awesome now that, like, you can go out and get the one player that you were maybe scared of on the opponent on the your central division opponent's team.
That's a great point, Corey. I was meaning to say that too. Is like I felt the same way. I dreaded his at bats, and I was just like, if the Cubs can get through him, I felt a little bit better.
Yeah. Yep. I don't really have anything else to say about Hayward. So I guess let's move on. And there was another signing that maybe some people have forgotten about. The Cubs got yet another player to come to the north side for less than what other teams were offering, and that's Central Illinois native Ben Zobrist. And he signed with the Cubs earlier in the week.
Yeah, Zobrist signed a 4-year, $56 million contract, and Hayward took less money than was on the table to come to the Cubs. And so, you know, I think like you mentioned before or alluded to at least that, you know, things like Joe Maddon were factor, you know, Maddon in the front office, the team that the Cubs already have assembled were a factor. And a lot of people are saying, well, Maddon got his guy. I think, yeah, he wanted to play for Maddon again. Maddon, when he gave his reaction to the signing, he called Zobrist a selfless player and a player who's all about winning. So he obviously loves the guy and loves his versatility. He's going to play second base, but in his big league career, he's played everything except for catcher. I'm guessing he's pitched at some point in mop-up duty. I don't know. but he's played all outfield positions, all infield positions. So he has a ridiculous versatility that he brings to the table. His best positions are second base and the corner outfield spots, but he can do it all. And he seems to be willing to do it too. Whatever the Cubs want from him, he sounds like he is a team player who will be willing to make the move wherever he's needed. So that's really cool. He's also a switch hitter. And he hits well about the same from either side. Michael from Galesburg will be excited to learn that when he was young, he made a wiffle ball field in his family's backyard. And this was according to an article on Kansas City Star's website, that he meticulously mowed and painted an elaborate lighted wiffle ball field in his backyard. And so in the same article, his dad, the same article said that his dad was convinced that his aptitude for switch hitting started with wiffle ball. so he hit left-handed a lot while playing wiffle ball.
His pitch recognition, really.
anyway, he's most likely going to be leading off for the Cubs, and he brings a .355 career on base percentage to the table. Just for comparison's sake, Fowler's career OBP is .363. But Zobrist did average 4.02 pitches per plate appearance in 2015. So he brings a disciplined plate approach and will be definitely serviceable in the leadoff spot. Just a couple other things is that he will be 35 at the beginning of this next season. He had knee surgery in April of 2015. So there is some question about if his defense is going to be as solid as it was in the past. And in fact, his ultimate zone rating was down in 2015. He's not attempting to steal bases as much. So this is something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. But obviously the familiarity with Maddon and vice versa. Obviously I think if, there were too many, warning signs or whatever, I'm sure Maddon wouldn't have been able to identify those things. So I think it's kind of cool that here for the last year, we kind of talked about Maddon looking for his Zobrist type guys. And then again, Zobrist taking less money to come play on this team. It's just, it's so weird. But it's so awesome.
Though he's from Illinois, Eureka, his family's all Cardinals fans apparently, so they were not all thrilled about it, but I'm guessing they're all thrilled about where he's going to be geographically speaking.
Yeah, and well, I'll tell you what, if my daughter ended up being able to play baseball for the Cardinals and have, I don't know, like a 50 some million dollar contract, I'd probably be okay with it.
You're able to get past it. Right. I mean, you'd be able to slide that Cardinals jersey on though. I mean, just no problem.
You do one of those half and half things.
The Brady Quinn sister.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to see that them continue to go after these OBP guys. I mean, it's clearly important to them. Getting on base equals runs. And I just did a quick search. And so you look at 1 through 4 OBP last year. So you just said it. Zobrist was 355. Hayward 359. Then you maybe go Bryant at 369. Then you go Rizzo at 387. Those are your 1 through 4 OBPs from last year. That's a tough 1 through 4 to face.
It's pretty sick, yeah.
One of those four is going to get on base almost every time.
Yeah, and just the power in that lineup. Oh, man. And that's why I'm okay with, like, Hayward. You know, I've heard people say that, like, Hayward isn't really showing the power that he did earlier in his career or that it was projected that he would have. And really, I don't think you need – there's no lack of power in this lineup. And so if he just wants to get on base, focus on getting on base, that's just fine with me.
Even Ben Zobrist has hit 27 home runs in a season before. So he has some pop too.
So what do you guys think this Zobrist signing means for Baez? If Zobrist is primarily going to play second base, what do you think that means for Baez?
I think it means be versatile if you want to remain a part of this club. And it sounds like that's what he's going to be working on.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to find an opening and then excel there, whether that's center field or, I mean, center field kind of looks like his shot, but.
I think I really like Baez. And so I kind of hope that he gets a fair shake. I think he will. Cause I think anybody that, I mean, I think Castro showed that if you're playing well, you're going to get to play, even if their intention was that you weren't going to. So I think Baez will get his shot. But I am comfortable. Like, I think maybe having Baez have to be the starting second baseman from the get-go and have to be the everyday guy right now, I think that puts some pressure on him that maybe he's not. I guess I just look at, like, how the Cubs used him in the second half, or once he got called up after his injury in 2015, and especially looking at, like, you know, that three-run homer, I think it was a three-run homer that he hit in game four. It seems like it might do him well to be in a position where there's not a lot of pressure on him every day. And so.
But I mean, do you guys think that he's going to waste to be a guy that's just giving guys days off? You know, I mean, why not? Should the Cubs seriously be trying to find pitching in a trade for him if that's going to be what he is?
Yeah, I would almost rather see. I think that's especially if you're looking at some of the Cleveland pitching and stuff, I think Baez has to be on the table. But honestly, I think if Baez plays really well, I would think that it would be Zobrist that would get pushed into kind of moving around and playing there for guys' days off and stuff like that. I think if Baez can prove himself, I could see him kind of taking over the everyday second baseman position.
Yeah, I suppose I could see that too. I mean, I guess that's the kind of the positive of all this is, like, there's so many options that, and I think they've made it clear that you're not just going to grab a position unless you're, you know, Anthony Rizzo, and everybody else is just going to have to be versatile and take what comes your way, and they'll play the hot hand. So, yeah, I think it gives you so many options.
Well, and especially with injury. I mean, the Cubs were pretty lucky in 2015 as far as injury goes, and depth is always a great thing. So, I guess before we move on to Starlin Castro, the reports are that the Cubs aren't necessarily done this offseason, which is no surprise given how they've how they've handled the offseason so far. Obviously, there's lots of bullpen arms out there to sign and then maybe let go, like almost. And so I guess we can kind of use this topic to segue into the Castro discussion. And I guess what that is, what I'd like to kind of talk about here is that I think it's really kind of like short-sighted to look at any off-season move as an isolated deal. And moving Castro freed up some money to make it help make it possible for the Cubs to bring in Zobrist and Hayward. And I mean, a week ago or so, it looked like the Cubs had about $20 million a year to spend after signing Lackey. And so I think people looked at that Castro trade, Castro for Warren, and then feel like, and Brendan Ryan, and feel like that the Cubs lost that trade. But all of these moves kind of had to go hand in hand. And I think when it's all said and done, you look at what the Cubs had at the end of the season in 2015, and then look at what they have when they start 2016. And I think that you really kind of have to judge an offseason and judge trades by looking at it that way rather than individually. Because I think, you know, it looks like Warren could be really good, but I think that, you look at how many hits Castro has and the fact that he is on pace, could be on pace for 3,000 hits, which, you know, I realize this is kind of a ridiculous statement, but 3,000 hits pretty much gets you in the Hall of Fame. And so I think 10 years from now, you could look back and like, oh, the Cubs gave up Castro. Who'd they give him up for? Oh, Adam Warren. Who the heck was that? Or, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that guy or something like that. I don't think that this offseason and the way that things are going right now, I don't think that you can look at each deal isolated. I think you have to look at everything as a whole.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
I just wanted to bring that up because I've already seen like on Twitter and especially after the Castro trade, people are like, this makes no sense. And it's like, well, yeah, it actually makes a lot of sense. You know, yeah, like
on the surface, it looks like you're trading, you know, a young
all-star
second baseman.
I mean, all-star minimum for an all-star
second baseman and paying him more.
Right. And a pitcher that might be a starter, might be a reliever, but I don't know. I was really sad to see Castro's years with the Cubs, his era with the Cubs come to an end. And I'm not in any way saying that I don't like the deal. I do like the deal, but I just really liked Castro. And he was so young when he came up. We basically saw him grow up, and I've always liked him, but I really liked him after this season. And what he did, and I think all Cubs fans can relate to this, what he did was, in 2015 was so impressive. And I think that he matured a lot this season. He handled the adversity well. He worked hard. And we're not in the clubhouse. We don't really know what goes on in the clubhouse. But all signs indicate that he had to have been a good leader. And he probably could have fractured the clubhouse in some way after getting benched. But he worked hard and he came back. He earned a spot and played a huge role in the Cubs' run in August and September. So I guess, what were your initial impressions? Like, as soon as you heard that the Castro trade had happened, what did you think, and where are you at now with it?
I think
go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm probably pretty much on the same page as you that I like the overall, you know, improvement on the team, but, you know, it was hard to see him go. I mean, because it's, you know, he's the guy that's been there through all the really terrible stuff, and been kind of at times a highlight. You know, everybody's had their Castro frustrations. But as a whole, I mean, with the guy that young and coming up, and would he come up at 19? You know, he was there through the hard times, and now he doesn't get to sort of be around for the good stuff. And that's a little bit hard. But at the same time, I really liked him too, you know.
You're right. It feels like we've been on a journey with him. You know, we've seen the highs, we've seen the lows, and we would have liked to see him experience even more success with the Cubs, I'm sure. But it wasn't surprising that he got traded to me. I figured somebody had to go via trade, and it made sense that he would be the one. But still, I'm a little sad about it as well.
It does suck that here he was I mean, I guess now we'll be able to look at, other than the 2015 season, I mean, if you want to look at the worst stretch in Cubs history, it's that a 20-year-old Starlin Castro was really all we had, and Rizzo, that's all we had. And you're right. I mean, I don't know. I do feel bad for him, because it's like, talk about a guy that put in his time with a bad freaking baseball team, and a team that called him up probably too early. You know, I think Hendry called him up too early. And he didn't even, you know, he didn't play in AAA at all. He was only in AA for what, like half a season, and, called up too soon, made adjustments, hit 300 and 307 or whatever the first two or three years. And then isn't going to be able to be there for, you know.
Yeah, I've got to say that 2011 season, holy crap. You know, he had 207 hits that season. He hit 36 doubles that season. He, I don't know, from 2011 to 2013, he led the National League in at-bats. I don't know. He had 307, as you mentioned, in 2011. He had a great season that year.
Yeah, and basically had to learn on the fly, because he probably should have been in the minors for another year, year and a half or something, and just had to learn on the fly because the Cubs had nothing else. And I don't know. I hope he does well in New York, you know, and it feels like he's not necessarily going into a, I mean, the Cubs are definitely more competitive in 2016 and are going to have great, you know, much better odds in the postseason than to get to the postseason than the Yankees. And so it kind of sucks that, thanks, kid. But so do you guys have any favorite Castro memories? It's kind of a trip down memory lane.
Oh boy, this is,
I wasn't prepared. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I mean, obviously the shadowing play would have to be like number one. And I planned on playing the audio from that, because we were actually recording this podcast, Andy and I, we were recording a midweek episode when that happened, and just like our reactions to it were pretty awesome. So I think that has to be number one. And also, I was actually on a Yankees podcast tonight. They were kind of wanting the scoop on Castro and stuff, and one thing that kind of came out in the conversation, and it was just mentioned in the chat too, was like his walk-up song. And I think I talked about this maybe about a month ago, or I don't know. I remember talking about it. I don't even know who I was talking to, if it was on this podcast, but that, like, I think that it kind of, like, his walk-up music, in a way, like, okay, how do I word this? I think that a lot of Cubs fans were probably skeptical of the changes that were coming to Wrigley, be, you know, through the video boards and the walk-up music and stuff like that. And I kind of feel like Castro's walk-up music allowed fans, stuffy traditionalist fans, to understand how fun baseball could be. I think this whole season did it, but I think that song did. And I was talking to these Yankees podcasters about it, I said it was almost like the song was our opportunity, the fans and the team. It was almost everybody's opportunity to be supportive of Castro through a difficult stretch for him. And when there was probably a lot of really negative stuff about him being said out there, it was kind of like sitting in the stands. I felt like it was like our opportunity to be supportive of him and just have fun. And so I think that, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good memory. Man, his home run swing too, like when he really clobbered one, it was fun to watch. He could really turn on a pitch at times.
I also enjoyed, and I know, Andy, this is a favorite of yours too, when he was in the on-deck, or no, he was in the batter's box, and the catcher went out to talk to the pitcher, and Castro stepped out of the box and started spitting sunflower seeds in the air and then hitting him with the bat. I loved it. Because like that's just the kid that he was. You know what I mean? It was just refreshing with when you think about the amount of money that players make, and you think about just all the pressure of Major League Baseball. And this is something, again, that came up with that Yankees podcast, is that, like, he, like, this is a kid's game. And he was having fun. He looked like a kid. He acted like a kid. And in a way, it could be very frustrating at times, but it was also refreshing, I think.
Yeah, and he would, like, we were all frustrated when he missed the routine plays, you know, that he missed at times. But then he would turn around and make an incredible play. Like, it just seemed like it was almost like it was more of a given that he was going to make the ridiculous plays in the field than the routine plays at times.
Right. Yeah. But, so, go ahead.
I just, like, think how many of the funny gifts from this season are Castro based too, or, you know, there's so many funny gifts from him, just his different facial expressions. Really was pretty delightful.
Right, because we honestly hadn't seen much of Castro's personality until this year. And it was a lot of fun to watch him, like you mentioned, those gifts and his expressions and stuff like that. I mean, it was kind of like finally kind of a little glimpse at his personality and him having fun with this team, even though he was probably going through a lot because his individual performance was so poor in the first half of the season. I think back to that one where there was a really close, I think they maybe were even playing the Cardinals, or I don't know. There was one where there was like a really close force out at second to end the game. And he kind of did like any, or no, didn't he like bobble the ball and then throw it over there? And it was really close. And he kind of did like a, like his eyes got real big, like kind of a, whoa type. That was me adding audio to a GIF. Whoa. Ooh,
yeah. It does kind of sound like he's dead or something, the way we're talking about him. Somebody just said rest in peace in the chat, but
well, he plays for the Yankees now, so he's essentially dead.
Oh, I'll get to that later. In my muscle internet muscle
flex. All right.
Yeah. Okay,
just a little sneak preview of the muscle flexes.
So, keeping this thing moving along, we do, if you're new to our podcast, Kurt has a segment during the season where he looks at scary stats. Now, considering this is our seventh season of podcasting on the Cubs, typically the scary stat of the week was a frightening, terrible, scary stat. They've gotten better, especially this season. But I thought this might be kind of a good opportunity for us to share Starlin Castro scary stats. Mine's quick, so I'll go first and then you guys can take over. So my Castro scary stat is that since 2010, which was Castro's rookie season, only one middle infielder in baseball has more hits than Castro, and that's Cano. So he had 991 hits since 2010.
Well, I was okay. Well, this is anticlimactic, but mine was essentially the same about the number of hits that he had. So, sorry.
Okay. Well, okay. I think we can twist you. We could twist that into another scary stat, but I don't want to. Andy, is yours hit related?
No, but mine's kind of negative, so I don't know if that's appropriate.
Okay, so let's take Kurt's.
It can be.
Let's take Kurt's. So 991 hits, and we can say that he is on pace for 3,000 hits. That's kind of a scary stat, I think. I mentioned it earlier that's you know, that could probably get you in the Hall of Fame, and that is a scary stat.
Yeah, gosh, he was a hit machine in 2011, hitting 207.
Yeah.
And 152 singles in 2011, which is insane.
Okay, but, so, well, thanks for bringing everything down with a negative stat there, Andy.
Well, that was positive. Those two.
No, I'm just saying. But, okay.
Well, I mean, okay. I don't know. It might seem tacky to kind of at this point to spin it into something negative. But
no, because that's what it was. That's what his career was with the Cubs. So I think that's I think that's symbolic of his career.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, you think about the lineup going forward without him. You know, you can't help but think about that. In 2015, he saw on average 3.68 pitches per plate appearance, which was one of the lowest on the team. But going forward, you look at the players the Cubs are going to have in the lineup still. And the lowest, as far as I can tell with the starting lineup, is Jason Hayward, actually, in 2015, saw 3.84. Everybody else is at 3.9 or above. And everybody except for Hayward and Rizzo are above 4 pitches per plate appearance in 2015. So that includes Bryant, Montero, Soler, Schwarber, Russell, and Zobrist. And so, like we've already established, I mean, the lineup is looking pretty rugged, but it's also looking like a very disciplined lineup.
Right.
And so we thought last year it was pretty rough to look at for opposing pitchers. In 2016, it's looking like it could be very brutal.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I missed your stat. Like how many pitches per plate appearance did he see?
Castro was 3.68.
Oh, okay.
In 2015.
Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, and that was kind of the criticism of, or one of the criticisms of the 2015 team was that they struck out a lot. But I mean, that one of the reasons they struck out a lot was because they saw a ton of pitches. And so it's not exactly a wasted strikeout when you do that.
Okay. I found a new one. Castro's only been hit by pitch 28 times in his 6-year career. Anthony Rizzo got hit by pitch 30 last year. So apparently he doesn't like to stand in there and just take one like his buddy Anthony.
Well, he made contact with all the pitches that were about to hit him. Right.
If you swing at a strike, if you swing at a pitch and it hits you, it's still a strike. So maybe they
he fought it off.
Hit him on the hands.
All right. Well, we're not going to spend a lot of time on Adam Warren and Brendan Ryan right now. But as I mentioned, I was on the Bronx Pinstripes podcast earlier tonight for their episode this week. And Andrew and Scott from the Bronx Pinstripes podcast did talk about Adam Warren and Brendan Ryan. And so I'm going to play that clip right now.
All right, so Scott, Adam Warren's going over to the Cubs. For me, I still love the trade for both sides. I think Cubs fans are really going to like Warren. For me, the best compliment I can say about Warren is he's got guts and he competes. And I think really Cubs fans are going to see that because he pitched out of the rotation, he pitched out of the bullpen, and he responded no matter where Girardi put him.
You know, Yankee fans did not want to see Adam Warren gone. I think it was a surprise that he was being traded away, and I think a lot of the reason why there was such hesitancy on the side, obviously when we saw we were getting Starlin Castro, we were excited about it because it was a need. It was something that we needed, and the value was there for both sides. But, you know, Adam Warren was a guy that we've relied on for so many years. And, I mean, he was a seventh inning guy, an eighth inning guy. He was in there, you know, when injuries would come about, and he would be a dependable right-handed relief pitcher out of the bullpen. And like you said, I mean, the guy's got guts. He's a competitor. He goes in and he doesn't have the greatest stuff in the world. He doesn't throw 99 miles an hour, but he will compete. He'll throw a lot of strikes, and he gives you a lot of flexibility. And, you know, whether it's the back of the rotation as a 4-5 starter, you're going to get 5-6 innings out of him every single time. You know, he's not going to give you that three inning blow up performance 99% of the time. I mean, it may happen occasionally. It happens to everybody occasionally. But primarily, he's your guy that you're going to see get deeper into the game and give your team a chance to win. So I think for where the Cubs are right now, adding some flexibility and depth, it's a really good move. You know, obviously with Castro being a guy that they needed to move anyway. So I think it was a good spot for them to be in.
Yeah, it's one of those rare trades where I think that both sides, when you look at it, you know, maybe 3 years from now, I think both sides are going to be happy with it. So Cubs fans, take good care of Warren for us.
Yeah, and Brendan Ryan was the other guy in that trade. And, you know, he's a guy who, I mean, you probably know about Brendan Ryan because he's been on, you know, I don't know, 15 teams in the major leagues. But he's obviously a journeyman infielder. He adds depth as a defender. He's not going to hit very, very much, but he does give a veteran leadership type of guy in the clubhouse, and he's a plus defender. He can play, you know, three different positions on the infield. I think he even slotted in at first base a couple times actually for the Yankees this year. So he's a guy that can play everywhere, and he's a fun guy. He's actually a really fun guy, and he's definitely a good clubhouse guy. So, you know, I don't even know if he makes the team coming out of spring training, but if he does, he's definitely a good guy to at least a utility infielder for defensive sub. I know your crazy professor manager likes to make a lot of substitutions, so he's a guy that he could be flexible with.
Yeah, the only good thing I think I can say about Brendan Ryan is he can grow a really good mustache.
It's a sweet mustache.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so I mentioned in looking at all these moves and kind of looking at them as a collective rather than individual moves, I wanted to wrap this whole discussion up by looking at where we stand with the 2016 Cubs and how they have improved this offseason. So I looked at the 2016 projected WAR on Fangraphs, the Steamer projections, and this is the WAR. Okay, so Hayward, his projected WAR is 4.8. Zobrist projected is 3.3. Warren, his projected WAR is 0.4. So that's with him projected to be pitching out of the bullpen. He had a 2.2 WAR pitching from the pen and starting. I think he started like 17 games with the Yankees last year. So I'm going to kind of throw that out. And Zips gives him a 3.7 WAR in 2016, which actually kind of looking out to the Zips is, I think it's 3.7 in 2016, 3.5 in 2017, and 3.4 in 2018, which is really better than I thought that it would be. And so then they lost Castro, and he was projected to have a 1.2 WAR. So in the last week, with losing Castro, adding Hayward, Zobrist, and Warren, the Cubs have gained 10.6 WAR in the last week. And also, if you're curious, Fowler, because I'm sure somebody'd say, well, that means, you know, taking Fowler out, he's projected to have a 1.7 WAR in 2016. But I just thought that was incredible, like 10.6 WAR added in the last week.
Ridiculous.
Well, 92 wins plus 10.
Well, okay, so you compare it to the Cardinals. Let's do that. Let's end with just like jabbing a hot poker into the Cardinals for a second. And I mean, yeah, this is projected, and games are not played in on paper, but in December and in the off season, we have nowhere else to play them. So that's where we play them, is on paper. So the Cubs in 2016 right now are projected to have 98 or 99 wins, and the Cardinals are projected to have 86 wins. So on paper, the Cubs are probably about 12 games ahead of the Cardinals. Which,
dang.
And even though we were excited about the Cubs 3 years ago and we saw this team coming together, if I would have told you guys 3 years ago that on paper the Cubs would be projected to win 98 or 99 games and 12 games ahead of a team that has won the division 4 years in a row, would that not seem somewhat like a fantasy?
Yeah, for sure. Oh man.
So I don't know. I just think if that stuff doesn't get you excited for 2016, then I don't know what will.
Man, I can't wait for baseball. I can't come soon enough. I'm pretty jazzed about hockey. Just nothing's really doing anything for me as I think about the Cubs. I can't wait for baseball.
I know.
Yep, me too. I've re-entered the world of trying to figure out how to get to Arizona, so my attitude has changed a little bit.
I hope you're there to join us, Kurt.
Me too.
All right, so before we get into the internet muscle flexes, I did want to mention, of course, that we have an IVNB app that's on Android and iOS, and you can download that, listen to the podcast from there. You can also contact the show, email us from the app, or you can leave voicemail on our voicemail line. We'll get to some of that later. And so, yeah, it's free, totally free. You can find it in the iOS App Store or on the Google Play Store. And if you're doing any last-minute shopping on Amazon, make sure you go to ivmv.com and click on the Amazon link on the right side of our page. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and Amazon gives us a percentage of your purchase. So let's go over some internet muscle flexes. And again, if you're new to our podcast, what we do is we used to go to Cubs.com, go through the comments and everything and find instances of commenters flexing their muscles on other commenters. Since then, it's kind of like transitioned over to social media. So we spend a lot of time looking at Cubs Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that to see basically that same sentiment, the same arrogance, just displayed in a different venue. So
intelligence or
right,
not so much of it.
Right. It's usually they go hand in hand, though.
Yeah.
I've got a few here. All of mine came from the they were all in reference to the Cubs trading Starlin Castro. So I think the Cubs posted something on Instagram, like a picture of Castro and thanking him for his time and stuff. How do you guys have multiples?
I just have one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just one. I mean, I could have multiples, but I'm going to stick with just one.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read a couple and then I've got one I want to end on. This one's good though. And if you have kids in the car, you might want to skip ahead through some of these, I think. So this one, yeah, in reference to Castro, it says, in all caps, "You assholes will regret this. Billy Goat is back. # Starlin Castro curse."
I saw that one.
Jeez.
There's also one here that says, "Just like Eckersley to Oakland."
I was like,
man, I kind of don't remember that trade. And I kind of looked back and I couldn't really find any parallels, any connections to those things.
Just like it though.
Okay. Okay. I have one more, then I'm going to let you guys go. So this is, this person is referring to Adam Warren or to Ben Zobrist. And the person says, "I'm sorry. I've Googled him and nothing comes up. He must not exist. They really effed up this time." The bumbling band.
Bumbling band of misfits finds a nobody once again to pay a bunch of money to.
It doesn't even exist.
Okay, so here's my muscle flex. And it was from an Instagram. It was from the Instagram post about Starlin Castro also. And in reference to getting Adam Warren, one of the commenters commented, "Like we need any more pitchers." That's it.
That's all. We don't. All right, mine. Oh wow, I get to end it all. Mine comes from Anthony Rizzo's Instagram. He posted a little message about missing Starlin, and this person says, "And I wish I could just spell it all out for you, but you can kind of guess how it's all spelled as I read it." He says, "That sucks, brah. I'll miss that rad MF-er. Alcantara better be back, stat."
give me Alcantara, stat.
We needed a second baseman.
Arita!
Brah.
Oh, man. Okay, here's another one. I'm going to edit this. F the Cubs. "As a big time fan, I hope the Yankees win the World Series next year. Idiots." And then he posts a few down and he says, "I'm selling my Cubs season tickets. Anyone interested?"
Wow, the world's biggest Castro fan.
I was totally on board. I was totally on board with Theo and Jed until they did this. They clearly don't know what they're doing.
The bed is full of excrement and it's that and Geo's.
And yeah, so Andrew in the chat says that guy totally has season tickets. Yeah, I would guarantee that guy does not have season tickets. No. And if he does, Cubs, you need to do something about that. There's like 38 or like, I don't know, 100,000 of us that would probably appreciate those, an opportunity at those. So
yeah. And let it be known that I just said that in Geo's, and I wish I could say that was intentional.
I didn't even catch it.
That in Geo. Write it down, folks. Write it down.
It's like, well, as we learned, Kurt's quite familiar with Geos.
I don't know what that means.
Didn't you have a Geo Metro? Didn't we talk about that on here?
Yeah. Oh, the car Geo. Yes, absolutely. I didn't know if you meant worlds.
Fed and Geo.
Planets.
Oh, good stuff, good Andy. Stuff.
Oh, wow. We're like mimicking each other.
So we asked you to call in your opinions on all of this week's moves, and we will play those at the end of the episode here after the music. So stick around and listen to what other fans think about these moves. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. A special thanks to our associate producer level supporters, Matthew Macer, Anthony Hutfels, Joshua Hansen, Ryan Shores, Brian Hunt, Andrew Gross, Tim Marr, Ryan Winkle, and the Quad City Zone, Jason Nunn. We've had some folks jump on the Patreon campaign here in the last few weeks. Todd in Wautoma, Wisconsin. I hope I'm saying that right. Wautoma, Wisconsin. Matthew in Richmond, Virginia. Justin in Richmond, Virginia. We're huge in Richmond, Kurt. We're gigantic in Richmond. We're so popular in Richmond.
I might have to take a trip to Richmond.
And Vic in New York City. So thanks to those guys. And here over my winter break, I'll get caught back up with all the Patreon perks and get that stuff sent out. Patreon is like Kickstarter, and it allows you to support bloggers and podcasters. And support from Patreon is how we pay the podcasting bills and how we improve this podcast and enhance everyone's IVMB experience. Pledging levels start at just $1 a month, which is just pocket change, but it does help us out a lot. Go to patreon.com/IVMB. to pledge and see the perks that you can receive. That's patreon.com/IVMB. So that does it for this week's episode. Stick around and listen to the voicemail after the music here. And until next Sunday evening, go Cubs.
This is Matt Ely from Richmond, Virginia, and my thoughts about the big Cubs moves this week is tentative excitement followed by overwhelming excitement. The big thing, I think, with the Hayward contract is fears about the nature of it, with the opt-out in the third and fourth year, about it being front-loaded and everything else, feeling like Cubs, you know, the Cubs fans would get played with a heavy contract on the front end that doesn't pay off, or something else. But the other way to look at it is that the Cubs are betting on this team, you know, the team that we fell in love with in 2015, and saying they're willing to take a risk on a less than ideal contract with Hayward because they believe in 3 years, this team, this core group of guys can get us a win in the World Series. So I choose to relish the confidence that this front office has in the team and in the culture and in everything that they managed to accomplish in 2015. And Zobrist is just icing on the cake. I think it's a great move, gets us new pitching with Warren and everything else. But overall, I'm choosing to be very happy about this and happy about the vision that the front office seems to have, and the fact that they're pulling out all the stops to make these next few years some great historic years for the Cubs.
Hello, this is Sean from Iowa. And I found out at work today, and I would have to say all of my coworkers are quite pleased that, you know, by next week I will be doing actual work again and not just sitting and watching Twitter and the like. So I got that going for me. As far as my actual reaction, I'm here at home right now, so I can finally do this.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo!
You
you know what I want to do? I want to scream like Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire, except this is like a family show, so I can't probably do that. But, wow! Yeah! I know it's a family show. Can I say, fuck it, St. Louis? Can I do that? Is that all right? Oh, that's awesome. He took less to come to Chicago? Oh, yeah! This is marvelous! Who says marvelous anymore? I don't know. I didn't even take my medication today, and I am just off the wall happy about this. So, yeah. Sorry if that's too loud. I tried to pull the phone away and everything. So, yeah, all right. I'm going to go to a party and just sit and dream about April. So, rock on, fellas.